We are editing, producing, and like hosting this podcast all by ourselves.
It is challenging, but we've learned a lot as we have gone through.
As you all know, I only had a short period before I became pregnant again.
You don't immunise your child, like, how irresponsible.
You do things that you believe are the way you're supposed to do them.
I think once you've seen that level of detail, you can't unsee it.
We started really young, not saying no.
Insert, I had one of my worst parenting days yesterday and I'm still highly emotional.
I definitely have found it liberating, but also tricky.
The like mum friends that I've made have been like a real lifesaver.
And in my first time mum, I don't know realm, I was a bit like, oh.
Motherhood is just a series of making choices for your child.
The tired mum may not then pick the boob up again.
So I put that pressure on myself and it was at a complete detriment to my mental health.
Good morning, everybody. Good afternoon, good evening, depending on where you're listening from. Welcome back to another episode of Voice Note Vault. I say another episode, it's our last episode, everyone. Alex, it's the last one.
I know, sad. Cries.
I'm so sad. Like, we've come a long way to get here, and I'm sad that it's at the end.
I wonder how many hours we've actually spent, like, doing this. Do you know what I mean? There was, like, a year in the making before we even brought it to the people. Wasn't it? And then obviously we've been recording, planning, everything that goes into it. Yeah, it's been a lot, so it's nice. Yeah, eight episodes.
Well, hey,
I know, proud of us.
We have done well. And speaking of being proud of us, we were trying to plan what our wing and win of this week was going to be.
Yeah.
And we both struggled to be like, well, what could our big win be? And I think we agreed on one, didn't we?
we're just super proud of ourselves, aren't we? Like, the fact that we have basically been winging this podcast the whole time since the beginning, and obviously the outcome has been a very successful series. Ultimately, we've had some really big numbers, which you're going to share. Are you going to share some numbers with them in a minute?
We could share some numbers in a minute.
And like, we've got them. We might as well, like, you know, gas ourselves a little bit. We are.
I mean, okay. We're going in balls deep with the gassing up.
Why not? Why not?
In, why not?
Well, if that's our big win.
Yeah, that's very true. We have been listened to in over 13 countries, and I'm going to boast and read them out because it blows my mind every time I see a new country like land on our list of stats. So we have been heard in the UK, the US, Ireland, Denmark, Mexico, Japan, Singapore, Germany, Spain, Ghana, Russia, Portugal, and Indonesia.
Random. That's amazing, isn't it?
Do you know what's even more random is when you can look at the breakdown of these stats, and we won't get into it now, but some of the places, like, for example, in the United States, we only get listened to in Virginia. Who knew?
That's so random. It's such a big country, isn't it?
I'm here for it.
Someone in Virginia is, like, there for us, or multiple people, who knows? But
Amen.
No, it's so cool, like, to even think about that. I mean, I had no expectations when we started, so I was a bit like, what do you mean, like, we're being listened to in Russia, like, or wherever, do you know what I mean? I'm like, what? Yeah. Like, and I don't know anyone that's recently holidayed in Russia, so I know it's not someone I know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That in the weekly downloads, it's just so exciting to see that is constantly going up each week, and that people are obviously finding us through just their normal, like, streaming, whatever they're called, what are they
services,
called? Services. Yeah, platforms. Yeah. And that's just really cool because we don't have a huge presence online. You know, we are just kind of trying to do it from the outset on our own. Mm. So, yeah, like, we're going to get into a bit more detail about that a bit later, aren't we? Yeah. Like, around how the podcast kind of came to life and how we podcast with children. So we'll save that juice for then.
Renee is so excited that we've had over 400 people listen. But just to your point, I honestly thought maybe like 10 people would listen, if that. I don't have 400 friends, so I was not for any second thinking that we'd be listened to outside of Surrey, to be perfectly honest with you. Yeah. So props to us. Good job, Renee. You smashed it.
So with that in mind, we've got a very exciting episode today. Again, using feedback from our listeners, which Khadija, you're just going to explain in a little bit, aren't you, about how this has come about. We are going to basically take some questions that we've had from our listeners and just go through them to kind of wrap up the series, answer the things that you guys want to know, and like get into some juicy conversations as always.
Ooh, the last slice of the juicy gossip.
Fab. So do you want to explain then how these questions came about?
So when we started this podcast, we created what's called a WhatsApp community. And for anybody that doesn't know what that is, it's kind of like a group chat, but it's used mainly by businesses and schools. We just think we're radical, to send out like almost like a modern day mailing list. So you can write in the group and you can have conversations, but you can also use it as a way to just inform people. So our VIP room, as we like to call it, is currently closed. And then we open it every now and then to get feedback, to get questions for like today's episode. But the rest of the time, we just use it to inform our listeners of anything juicy we've got coming up, when our new episodes launch, and any kind of behind the scenes gossip that we feel like, you know, they're privy to.
Yeah, and it's really good for those people that don't have social media. So I guess, like, if you don't have social media but you love our podcast, drop us an email. Let us know you're interested in the Vault VIP group, and we'll add you to and we'll add you to it. But obviously, if you're on social media and you want to be included on the VIP Vault, then we'll put up a poll, and if you answer it, then we can add you into it.
Yeah. And just to disclaim again, it's not a group chat. It's just a way of being kept into all the tea, get the hottest updates, get the fresh off the press, all the info without having to actually move or do or say anything.
Yeah.
Basically. Yeah. So
perfect.
Today we're going to answer all the questions and some of the tips we got from this week's VIP room. We asked the listeners to just give us anything that we've missed out, anything they want to know, anything they're dying for us to cover. And we're going to try and see if we can tick off everything that was asked. We had quite a lot of feedback.
Yeah, we did. Like, it's so nice to read the good stuff.
All right, so we're going to do a quick fire to start off with, because we got so many. These ones, I feel like we could just answer off the bat, and they don't need to be in too much detail. So let's start with an easy one, hopefully. Alexandra, can you give me one thing that keeps you positive whilst being a mum? Insert, I have no idea, I'm drowning in the deep end.
Insert, I had one of my worst parenting days yesterday and I'm still highly emotional about it. But anyway, I think one thing that keeps me positive is knowing Master Jay's going to go to school soon. So
5 days a week, everyone. Five days a week, go away.
I'm joking. Do you know what? I'm not even sure I want to send him to school. I think I might homeschool. So that actually isn't even something that keeps me positive. Oh, but that's a whole other ball game. I think, to be honest, like, aside from obviously the obvious in your partner, maybe, or like my partner's very supportive, I think having made like friends, and I know we touched on it in last week's episode about relationships and the friends that you make and etc. I just think the like mum friends, quote unquote, that I've made have been like a real lifesaver. Like, we're all quite different in certain ways, but we all, like, you have different mum friends for different things, right? And I just feel like I've made some really, really good mum friends, and that kind of does keep me, that does keep me positive in those moments where I can just be honest and just be like, I'm like literally crying in my sink right now, like this is really painful and I can't cope with this. They help, you know, pick you up off the floor when you've just can't do it anymore. So that's been like really positive, like helps definitely keep you positive. What about you?
My one positive thing is just the outdoors, you know, getting outside and getting into nature is just one thing that definitely keeps me sane. So get outside, people. Go for a walk.
It's true. Okay. Well, lovely. Right, what's the next one?
The next one is Ellie asked about saying no to children. Children saying no, your child saying no, and like tantrums and strops. And I know you said you had one of your hardest parenting days yesterday, but I just wondered if you had a quick fire, like, way to deal with or way to navigate either you saying no or Master Jay saying, no, mummy, go away.
I mean, I'm not going to lie, it's a lot, right? And it did, it did start when Master Jay was about one. And it's not, it's just escalated. It's very wild times for me at the moment. But I think one thing I did learn, and I can't remember where I learned it, but like one thing I do when Master Jay is like losing his mind, because he's probably just very tired. This is especially what happens on forest school days, is when he's just like really screaming or unhappy or whatever, I just hold up my hand like in a, like as if you have all five fingers up and you have them open. And I'm
like
saying,
a high five.
Like a high five, but like open hands. And I just say, come on, let's blow out some candles. And I get him to blow each of my fingers, like as if we're like, right, blow my thumb. And he goes, and then I put it, I put it down. And then we go through and we blow each of the candles, i.e. my fingers out. Yeah. And then by the end, he's usually like, again, again. And then we do that. And it does help because it just brings him out of the crazy whatever situation's going on in his mind and just centers him, I think, by breathing.
Oh, that's a good one.
So that has worked really well for me. It did not work for me yesterday, but that's fine. but if you haven't tried something like that, that might be something to try. And I did start that very young, even when he didn't quite get it. So I think that's why it works quite well.
Do you find that you behind him are blowing out those candles too when you're like, yes. Oh my God.
Absolutely. Oh my God. It gives me a chance to breathe as well. So we kind of do it together. Or sometimes I'll just hold up my hands. Like last night, it was so wild. Like his behaviour was so wild. Like it was so stressful. And I just held both of my hands up, like next to my face. And I was like, okay, let's just breathe together, Master Jay. And I'll go, breathe in, lift my hands up. And then I'll breathe out and I'll push my hands down. And I make him do it with his hands. And that actually did help yesterday. But anyway, my point is just get them to breathe, like, and get them to focus on something that's, like, a little bit fun, like blowing out the candles. Like, what about you?
We actually slightly differently. I'm going to give a kind of different tip. We started really young not saying no. I just found, I've watched so many mums and dads and child carers being like, no, Master Jay, no, Roman, no, Renee, no, Alexandra. And I was just like, I'm already can see myself being irritated by the repetitive, like, no, no, no. And respectfully, people say no, fine. But what we do in our house is we say, maybe not. And we say, think about it. So I was trying to teach, in saying that, I'm trying to teach Roman that you shouldn't do that, but you also need to understand that there's a consequence by doing that. So when he's trying to like climb up the TV unit, I'm like, maybe not, Roman. Should we think about what might happen if we fall down? Because I also am conscious that he doesn't understand what be careful means.
No.
So in usually when you're saying no to something, it's because they're doing something they shouldn't be. So I'm trying. I don't know if I'm doing it right and I don't know if it's working, but this is what we're doing in our house. We're saying, maybe not. And we're saying, think about it. Because I'm hoping that that might get him to learn why that's a bad thing, rather than me just being like, no, you can't have it. No, don't do that. Yeah. No, don't touch it. Yeah. And I understand why parents say no, but that's just what we do in our house.
So no, I agree. And we do a bit of that. We do a bit of that as well. Unless he's like trying to run out into the road and it's like, stop!
Oh yeah, sometimes I do have a no. And I actually also get told to think about it, which sometimes grinds my teeth. But you know, my two-year-old could tell me to think about it if he wants to.
I said yesterday, I was like, okay, let's just stop this now. I was like, let's just stop it. And I held my hand up. I was like, let's just stop it. Because I was trying to cuddle him and he wanted to cuddle, but he was still screaming. And I was like, let's just stop it. He was like, I don't like stop it. We don't say that in this house. I was like, anyway, so I think the answer is it's complicated on that one, but that's our experience is.
There we go. All right, so Chloe and Shanice asked about periods post having a baby. I wonder what your experiences are, whether yours were the same, different, whether you've had a period yet. Where do you sit with that?
I think there's a lot of like information, I guess. I really don't like that word because it's so overused, but there's a lot of confusion, especially online, especially when big influencers talk about stopping breastfeeding because of this, that and the other. Your periods can come back at any point after having a child. Some come back a lot sooner, some, you know, take a lot longer to come back. It really depends on so many different things. if you're breastfeeding, it's said that you know, it's more likely that your periods may be delayed in returning, especially if you're completely exclusively breastfeeding, so whether that's pumping or at the breast. So if you're formula feeding, then they are more likely to come back sooner, but it's not the case for everyone. There is no it will come back by this amount of time. Obviously, if you're concerned, then you should, you know, go and speak to your whatever healthcare provider or GP, whatever. But yeah, I mean, for me personally, it was about 7 months that it came back.
Okay.
And I was breastfeeding for a year. But I found that actually it did kind of coincide with me breastfeeding less. So once Master J did start to eat more solids, like I started at 6 months. I could have started before as he displayed all the signs, but I have worked in the baby food industry. And my personal opinion is you should probably wait until 6 months. Everybody has a different thing to say on that. You can do your own research on it. I personally wanted to wait because of the... because their stomachs are so sensitive. So it was around, 7 months when he was like really then into his food, and he was such a good eater that then he stopped breastfeeding as much. And I noticed that my periods then came back. And I'm not going to lie, my first few were horrific. Very heavy bleeds. I had endometriosis before having a child, and it seems as though those symptoms that I used to have, I don't have anymore. Which is amazing, because, and I have heard that happening before. I had it for nearly 10 years, and I was about to have a laparoscopy, and then I got pregnant.
Wow.
I was literally, given the letter for a laparoscopy to go in and check, like, the situation with the endometriosis. I actually have something called adenomyosis, and it has said that, having a baby can actually really help those symptoms. And I'm so lucky that since then, my periods are, after those first few months, maybe just after a year, they then were quite light, and now my periods are very, very light. Maybe maybe 2 days, if that.
Oh my god, get out of here!
Yeah, it's just going to show how different it is for everyone. Yeah. But I feel like after having the kind of pain that I had for 10 years, where I'd be floored for over a week, this is my time to just cope. And I still get pain, like period pain, but not something I have to medicate for. So.
Well, yeah, that's really good, and like refreshing for you and your body a little bit to not be in such crippling agony.
It's the least I deserve. But yeah, it just shows how different it is. What about your experience?
I mean, I was on the pill before I decided to have children, so I didn't have periods very often because of the pill I was on. Before that time, I was having quite heavy periods and quite uncomfortable periods. They weren't as debilitating as yours, but they were quite like that lower back. Oh my goodness, I just would like to take it off. Thank you.
Yeah.
So my first period after having Roman, I remember being like, oh my giddy aunt, what on earth is it? Like before it even like exposed itself, the pre-period like pain, I was like, what is this? Forgetting that was a thing, because obviously I never had one whilst I was pregnant, which I know some people can have. But they have definitely been lighter. However, I think they've been more painful. But as you all know, I only had a short period of non-pregnant before I became pregnant again, so I don't feel like I can comment too deeply, but I definitely can remember that they were a bit more uncomfortable than previously before having children. So yeah.
And have you I guess like one of the biggest questions that people ask, or you're asked after having a baby, is like going back on contraception, because you were on contraception prior to having pregnancy. Are you then going to go, I don't know, are you then back on contraception now? Because I guess obviously that will impact periods.
Yeah, I am back on contraception now. Again, we definitely have to talk about this in another episode, because I find the whole women being on contraception and just being on contraception in general just a whole other... I find it really stressful. However, the short version is, yes, I am on contraception at the moment. And I have been exclusively breastfeeding for almost 5 months now, so there is no sign of a period. But I am due to peel the stick soon, just to double check that there's no extra Roman and Renee's floating around the camp. Please pray to God there are.
What is that? Just something to do?
No, like the GP just said that you should take because I'm breastfeeding and I haven't had a period yet, I'm on the pill at the minute, so I should take the pill for a month, and then after a month I should do a pregnancy test just to double check that there's nothing going on in there. And
oh
then
my gosh.
Either yeah, oh my god, sweating, don't even, it's not moving on swiftly. I'm getting hot, everyone. But yes, you should do that, and then you can eat, you can like comfortably stay on the pill, or you can have, there are some contraceptive options which I looked at, like the coil or the injection, that you can't have until you've had a period because of the impact they could have on a baby if you should be growing one, which I am not, everyone, I am not, please tell me you are not. Woohoo! So yes, that's
my
short answer.
Okay, I didn't know that was a thing. But no, I guess it totally makes sense because you obviously could be. Like you just don't know. So yeah, okay, fingers crossed for you
next
that you're
question.
Not. Next question.
Thank you.
Right, so, what's the next one?
Cheryl asked about our choices to or to not immunise our children. Have you immunised Master J? What's the deal in your house?
Yeah, I mean, it's something I'm very open about. We do not immunise. We don't. Which I know people are probably like, what?
Yeah, the back row just
mean?
Went,
oh,
my
I know,
God.
You don't immunise your child. Like, how irresponsible. Blah, blah, blah. I've had a lot of comments, like, about that, but I'm always very, very, very open about the fact that I don't immunize him. And I have actually, like, not that they were my friends in the past, but like, I have it before, like, you know, one of those baby sensory groups when I was like very early in my journey, like, it came up because you know, you have like the 6 week jabs or 8 week jabs, whatever, and like, everyone was talking about how, like, unwell their baby was, and they were like, oh, how did Master J respond? And I was like, yeah, he didn't have them, so no, he's cool, like, he's fine. They were like, what? Like, could not fathom it. And so then a few of them didn't want to talk to me anymore, so I was like, okay, cool.
I can't imagine.
But you know, I was having had him at a time after the world had just been in disarray over the bloody COVID vaccination, lots of divided opinions on it. So to then be like a person that's saying, oh, I'm not immunizing my child, they're like, believe it. But actually, like, I have found people that also don't immunize but just don't talk about it. So that's been quite like comforting to find. But yeah, in answer to the question, it's something I researched for a very long time, even before I had children, because I was just of that. I was of that mind, I guess. And I think with the COVID situation, heightening feelings around vaccinations, I was like, okay, I need to just like really understand this a bit more. And I just, long story short, just went into a rabbit hole of obsessing over learning about immunizations, what the ingredients were, how they're administered, what the black box warnings are on them, and what the impact of them, vaccine, what they called, vaccine injuries.
I just
learned so much. And I think once you've seen that level of detail, you can't unsee it. And so therefore my decision 100%. Was, it's not for me. But obviously I was in a new relationship.
That's true.
With Jay, and so it was like an interesting conversation because obviously I was very keen not to immunize, but I was like, oh, well, what do you think about that? I'd really like not to immunize. It's the same, my feelings are the same with circumcision for different reasons, but I'm like, that's not happening. I was like, immunizations aren't happening. And he was like, oh, okay, like, cool, like, tell me, like, why. And I was like, yeah, no problem. Did a little PowerPoint presentation with all my research.
Here come the stats.
Yeah, like, gave him a list of all these studies. I had like 3 pages of studies reasons why. And yeah, he was just like, okay, cool, like, fair, like, totally understand, like, yeah, I agree with you, it's not for us. The only thing is, I'd probably quite like to give him the meningitis one. And I was like, I'll come back to you. So then I did a deep dive on meningitis vaccination, and I showed him, and he was like, okay, yeah, cool. I think like the level of effort that I'd gone into to like show him why it wasn't a good idea for us, he was just happy to go along with it, and he was very like invested in it because of the detail that I'd shown him. So obviously I'm like, no one in the situation, whether you choose to vaccinate or not vaccinate is trying to hurt their child, are they? Let's be honest. We're all coming at it from a good place for reasons we believe are right or wrong. And Jay obviously knew that I knew a lot more than him and respected that. And don't get me wrong, like, it was really tricky. It was really hard to navigate that at the beginning. As someone that I knew was the right thing, but it was quite hard to articulate when somebody asked me, especially a doctor, which Master Jay has been very, I'm not going to say lucky, like, he's just a very well child. And there was one time we went to the hospital because he had a sickness bug. Well, we all had it. And he was 9 months old. And I was asked at 3 a.m. why I wasn't vaccinating my child. I said, with all due respect, we're here for a sickness bug, not for a chat around immunizations. But if you really want to know, I brought up a list on my phone where I had just written the very key details of why I wasn't vaccinating. Because in those moments, like with anything, right, isn't it? When something happens, in those moments, you're like, oh, I don't know what to say, like, in those moments. Yeah. So I just had this list and I was like, because of this, because of this, because of this, this is. And I just had my 10, I had like 10 or 11 points, and she stopped me like five or six through. And she was like, okay. And I was like, thank you. Like,
I get it.
Yeah. So, you know, like, anyway, that's a bit of a longer story, but essentially, do your research, not just on Google, and weigh it up for yourself, basically. No one can really tell you what to do. What to do on that is my opinion. It's a personal choice. What about you?
The short answer is I vaccinated both of my children.
But did you...
Basically.
Did you... I mean, it's obviously very common. But it is actually nice to hear that other people don't nowadays as well.
Yeah. Like, and I know some people that have... I know some people that have gone private and chosen to have specific, like Big J saying, can we do meningitis? I know some of my friends that have said, we're not going to have the whole, like, section one, whatever it is.
Yeah.
We'd like to just do this one, and we're going to go private because we feel that the chemical in there is going to be of a higher quality than the GP, for example. So there are definitely, like, different ways to parent and different ways to immunise your children, for sure. So
absolutely. All I'm going to say, though, is
if
you are looking at a food menu in a restaurant for longer than you're looking at the ingredients of a vaccine that you're giving your child, you need to do some more research, because that is it's a really important part, is understanding the ingredients. And if you don't, how do you know what you're giving your child? You might still make the same choice, which is fine. But I really find it strange that people don't look at that, and yet they'll go for a meal and look up menus before they even go to the restaurant, but don't spend that same level of time. I know that's going to trigger some people, but I said it. Like,
I think it's like eye-opening, because I think people, and I respectfully am one of them, have like followed the crowd with these things, and you just do things. It's similar to our birth conversations. You do things that you believe are the way you're supposed to do them.
Of course.
And when, until you know that there are other options, or you feel confident, like, you to advocate for yourself in a way, like, I've made these choices, I've got my list, and these are, like, respectfully, these are my five reasons why I chose not to do A. It's quite hard to be like, oh no, I'm not doing
it. It's hard to go against the grain.
Yeah, so I think I think it's eye-opening that you've shared that, and I think a lot of people will be like, oh, okay, maybe I don't agree, or maybe I do agree.
Yeah, but
I'm going to look at that.
Yeah.
Right, so speaking of people being nosy, I have a few short questions that I've been asked repeatedly about your lovely self from our lovely listeners, that I wondered if you wouldn't mind just quickly like sharing your thoughts or your responses to.
There are
three short ones. The first one is, you're now a local celebrity, because lots of people are wondering why you are calling Master J Master J, and why you're calling J J as opposed to their, like, actual names. Come on.
Oh, okay. Well, J is just, so Big J, I just have always referred to him as J. Like, I think most people know that his name's Jonathan, but we just call him J. So there's no, like... Okay. There's no, like, real vibe around that. His friends and family call him something different. But, yeah, that's his name, and I just refer to him as Jay most of the time. So that's, like, no secret. And as for Master Jay, I have spoken and shared his name in the past, so some people may well know his name. But on a outward, like, podcast social media vibe. I just personally prefer to keep it private. It's not that it's like a big secret. Like, obviously, everybody that knows him knows his name. It's just more of a level of protection. In the same way, I don't often share his face on social media, which you're the same. And I've gone back and forward on that. I just feel like a name is very personal. If people do know in the area, I talk a lot about where he goes on a day-to-day basis. I just don't really want people to know. It's a level of protection, basically.
Okay. Yeah, fair. I think that's fair. And I think it's quite interesting for people to hear that, particularly because obviously I am like Roman and Renee-ing every 5 seconds.
Yeah.
So it's nice. In the same way we're sharing like different opinions on to immunise or not to immunise, I think it just gives people food for thought. Like, it doesn't have to be a big deal. It's just nice to know that, you know, you can choose to show your face, not show your face, tell your name, not tell your name. Like,
but that's the thing, isn't it? Because you've always been very, like, very strict around not even sharing photos of the children. Even with friends, you're like a view once kind of person. And on social media, you're not show a face, but then you're happy to share the name. So it's a balance of finding what's that. Whereas I've dipped and ducked over sharing Master J online and not been very sure. I think I've kind of settled on not, but it's like taken a 2.5 years to get there. Do you know what I mean? So
I think it's very individual, but thank you for clearing that up. My next question is that the lovely listeners would like to know what happened to your pelvis, where are you at with it now, and would you recommend the people you've been the professionals you've been seeking to help you, or I think you said you've been seeing somebody about something.
Okay, so basically after pregnancy, obviously all your body like moves back into the, you know, into position, but it can take a bit of time, in the same way that you talked about your diastasis recti last week. Was it last week? Last week. So yeah, it's a similar, like everything just didn't quite move back into the same position. And then it finally did. And what happened was is my pelvic floor muscles were so weak and so tight that it essentially, all of those muscles, it's tricky to explain because I can't show the people. But basically, all of the muscles are connected, and essentially some of the muscles were so tight that they pulled my coccyx up. So I therefore suffered with agonizing coccyx pain. And the short answer is I still do, but there are there are reasons behind that, which I'll go on to another time. But yes, I was seeing an osteopath, I was seeing an acupuncturist, and things were improving. So there is like hope for me. There are a couple of Instagram pages that I also use to help. The problem I have is the pelvic floor is tight. So I need to work on relaxing it and releasing it. It's not for me about strengthening my pelvic floor. And this is where I found so confusing after having a baby. They're like, do your pelvic floor exercises, do your Kegels, like strengthen it. I'm like, actually, it took me over 18 months to realize that that wasn't my issue. My issue was that it was too tight and therefore it was weak. But before I can strengthen it, I have to release it.
It's
quite tricky to do, and it's still a journey, but hopefully we'll get there at some point. Hopefully that gives a bit of insight.
That definitely does, and I've learned a lot. My last one is, the listeners would like to know whether, if we do a series two, would you be comfortable sharing more about your teenage pregnancy experience that you touched on, I think, in episode one or episode two?
I mean, there are things around it, like there's no shame in, you know, it is what it is. The short answer is like I can talk a little bit more around it. It's obviously a very like pivotal moment in your time. I wasn't a teenager though, just to be clear. I was in my 20s. Just, I don't want anyone thinking I'm out here like having a teenage child. Not that that if that's what happens, that's what happens, but no, that didn't happen. I was in my early 20s, so I was still very young, and yes, there's a lot that went on around that.
Okay, so the last one we have, we've done our questions for you now. We're back to our quick fires. Just thought I'd sprinkle those in to switch it up a bit. Ashley would like to know, what's the best piece of advice you've received whilst being a mum, since becoming a mum, about being a mum? What would you share with the listener?
Okay, bit of a twist on this one Ashley. I actually found the amount of advice that people were willing to give like incredibly overwhelming. And so it's not that it was necessarily like bad advice or whatever. I just think that there's a lot of like like I said about the periods and like the breastfeeding
okay
thing,
yeah
there's a
yeah,
lot of yeah. like confusing information and mm-hmm. so it just for me got overwhelming. I think I touched on it in another episode about how I just had to unfollow like so many people on social media and just kind of
yeah.
like do my own thing and find like the experts that I needed to like help me with certain things. Like I kind of just ended up getting to a place where I was like, I just need to do this on my own. And I just need to really listen to my intuition. I'd kind of lost my way with listening to myself. And so I personally think the only way to do it is to do it yourself and listen to your own advice. Okay. I mean, it's different if you're like asking somebody like, oh, how do I make up a formula bottle? I mean, there's still loads of opinions on that. I couldn't believe that. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't like mm-hmm. a big part of our journey. So I was like, how do you make a formula bottle? Like if I ever needed to use that. You know, that was still a bit confusing. But in terms of like general advice, I would say advice to somebody actually is just get in tune with yourself and just really just, I don't know how to say it, like just trust yourself and just give you, do it for yourself. I don't know how else to say it because
I
can just be very intense.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think you can get wrapped up in so many should we, shan't we, will we, won't we, can we, can't we's. And you should, just whatever resonates with you.
Yeah.
Then, go for it.
I think also just on that, because obviously it's quite clear that I do things quite differently to the, I'm going to say like normal route. I don't know if that sounds okay, but you know what I mean? Like you said, I can just go, like you went with the flow on immunizations or whatever you said. Like, that's just an example. It's like the same how I am with birth and how I'm very passionate about making informed choices. It was the same thing for me in motherhood. And that actually, I learned very early on, motherhood is just a series of making choices for your child. Amen. Obviously, always coming from the best place because, you know, of course, you're a mother, you're always going to want to come from the best place, of course. But just like when you know better, do better. Like, and I've not done it perfectly. I still don't do motherhood perfectly. But when we learn something new or we think about something else or how we can handle something, it's like, okay, I know better now. I'm going to do better. Like, and that can apply to so many different things. But the only thing that you're ever going to be able to do is you have to be able to stand on your decisions on everything you do, right? As a mum,
as a parent. For sure.
So, I think don't be influenced, and it's so ironic that I'm saying that, like don't be influenced by what other people tell you. So that is my advice that I'm basically telling you not to listen to. Lol.
Yeah. Don't listen to the podcast because you're going to be influenced by
But you know what I mean? I'm sharing that from a good place. I don't know. What about you?
My one is kind of, I suppose, controversial to what you've just said, because you have been very open, I suppose, about like your reservations with GPs and your choices to not always like run to the GP. And I'm not saying that I do, but a really good thing that I have learned and discovered since having both my children is that this notion of, it's kind of like the thing we have in our family, I suppose. You always go to the GP on a Friday because nobody wants to take a baby to A&E at the weekend.
Yeah.
So if you feel like Master J is something on a Friday or Thursday, take Master J to the GP and just say, I'm a new mum. I just wanted a second opinion.
Yeah.
I just wanted to be sure that that spot is this thing, because sitting in A&E on a Saturday or a Friday night with a sick child that's just got one chicken pox spot and you're not sure, it's a no for me. So my advice to any new mums that are not sure about that one little spot or that one little ism or that one little vomit that was a bit more than vomit, go to the GP on a Thursday or a Friday, and then you know for the rest of the weekend that you can rest, that you can have peace of mind. And maybe you go back on Monday because you're not sure, but at least you've had, you know, like, and maybe you do go to A&E, but my point is go.
Yeah.
Go and ask the question. Go and be influenced by the GP, but hopefully in a positive way.
Yeah.
And then you can take yourself home and chill.
I remember you telling me that at one point. And I mean, like I said, I've not had loads of experiences with
the GP.
With Master J, I've not had that. But on the occasions that I have felt concerned about something, obviously I'm not not against like getting medical help. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like I took your advice when you did tell me that like ages ago, I did go on a Friday, and it just gives you that peace of mind, doesn't it? So I actually think that is quite good advice. And that's not telling someone what to do. It's just like, like something to be aware of, because just to think like A&E is not fun at the best of times. And especially when you have to wait that long with a child, wild.
Yeah, let's know. So there's my hot piece of advice. Your and that cents. Rounds up our quick fire.
Or not quick fire.
Not quick fire, but, you know, we tried.
We talked too much. We love it. But we are going to go into a few topics that came up, like, a lot more, aren't we, now? There are three. So the first one, I'll kick this off for us, is around podcasting with children. So I think it was Kim in the group that was basically saying, it sounds like you spent hours prepping. I wondered how you manage to fit it all in with the babies you already have. Can you share some insights into the process involved? Do you want to kick that one off?
I think we should first just disclaim, because I think it's a big deal. We are editing, producing, and like hosting this podcast all by ourselves. So there's an element of like, maybe people assume or think that we're paying for a production company to do this for us. And there is no secret that we have had some help and support.
Yeah.
And we have had our music written for us, and we have spent a lot of time with a wonderful company called Torch and Compass, who have helped us get to this point.
Mm-hmm.
But they only edited episode one for us, and from 1 to 8 we have done all the groundwork ourselves. So first of all, props to us for that, because it's no small feat and it takes a lot of time.
It does.
Particularly when you have sound issues like we did 2 weeks ago.
Annoying.
It takes time to make it sound as professional as we are.
Yeah, so we use, in terms of like the process then, we can, we're quite, as Khadija's saying, we're quite open about the fact that we did like have kind of some consultants that helped us initially get our start up and running, and like tell us like how to basically edit or how to upload onto the platforms that send out the podcast, or, you know, your Spotify's, your Apple's, wherever, Google Podcast, which I think is where my dad is the only one listening. I'm joking.
No, I looked today.
Oh, really?
There were 7 people that listened on Google Podcast last week.
Didn't even know that was a thing. 7. So, Spotify is obviously our biggest, is where most people stream our podcasts. We learn, and we've got different roles and responsibilities within that, obviously covering off social media and writing all of the things and managing everything. So I think it is a lot, isn't it? It is a lot, but we're both learning new skills as we do it. And I think to answer like Kim's question around like how we manage to do it, I think sometimes on social media, like when you see like certain, like, I don't know, Z-list celebrities and things like starting their own podcast, it can come across like they just did a podcast, and it's like, yeah, that's probably because they are having it produced by somebody or things like that. Whereas it took us a year. Like it did. Yeah. It did take us a year from doing the IG TV series to getting to actually launching a podcast. And then we kind of learned as we went along, didn't we, each week? Like we tried to record some batch episodes, and then now we're actually recording in real time.
Even like doing research and getting feedback from the people, like respectfully to those, as you say, Z-list celebrities that have podcasts, they have like a production person that's going to do that, and then basically says like, here, Alexandra, here's your 5 questions that you should talk about today, or here, I've been through the sea of emails, and out of 50 emails, here's my top 3. Like, we're doing all of that on top of editing out, like, I've got builders in my on my block today, and there is no doubt that somewhere in this episode there's going to be a high drill like in the background, which I need to go back and find and cut that out, because I don't want the listener to hear that drilling. I want it to sound like a seamless show. And like writing show notes and putting links for things that we've shared, like when we shared our birth stories, we put links for like books and resources, and even just keeping that Instagram going.
Yeah.
We are doing that whilst also keeping babies alive.
Yeah.
And I definitely have found it liberating, but also tricky. Renee is currently asleep on my lap, but this whole process, she has been here under the table or behind the microphone, and it hasn't been easy at times to to host a podcast in silence with a baby. They don't stay silent because they're not meant to be silent. Do you know what I mean?
But I think that was a huge part of it, wasn't it? Is we're not like trying to, we are like, we've been very open. We're just like two mums and we're just trying to do something that we both enjoy and like see where it goes. And that's kind of was always our attitude towards it. Like even, you know, if we had like 10 listeners at the beginning, we would have been like so gassed about that. But to hear it's like 400 people is like, that's amazing. And the amount of people that were interested to answer our polls. And like you say, we're managing that ourselves. So I think it's no, like, I think basically it's very doable for anybody that wants to do it, but it's not easy. Yeah. Like it is hard work. And obviously we're doing it together. So that helps. If you're doing it on your own, there's obviously a lot more and we have a team and sometimes, you know, things don't always go to plan, but then you have someone else to pick it up, you know, and you have to ebb and flow with that.
We do a lot of like stuff in the evenings when the children have gone to bed.
Yeah.
And we record a lot of episodes on days when the boys are at school. So that kind of helps at least get rid of one child. Obviously I have two.
Yeah.
It kind of helps to be like, right, the noisiest child, she says, is out the picture. Let's quickly squeeze this in.
Yeah.
And then we can spend time later. But even like putting out the trailers we do ourselves, all that infographics we're doing ourselves.
Yeah.
The stories, the polls, the managing of the VIP room. It's not, I was very naive in the beginning, I think, and maybe you can agree, I don't know, but like that you just host a podcast and you just sit down with a microphone and you record for a cute 40 minutes and then like, whim, bam, bing, there it is.
It's not like that.
The like, no. But the actual work of it, if you want it to be successful, and I think our level of effort is why it's become successful, it's not something you can just be like, cute, here's my 40 minutes of chat on Tuesday, see you next week, like, you've got to keep it ticking over.
I found that like we'll go through periods where, because Khadija and I have like a separate like business chat, so we have our like personal chat, like, hey, how are you doing? But sometimes that doesn't get touched at the moment because we'll just be like so in business mode. It's like whenever we get 5 minutes, we'll just have like a flurry of messages. And that's sometimes tricky, isn't it? Because like you might be in a really creative mood one time and then like send all these things, and then I'm like, yeah, I can't do that right now. So like that has to wait. And that, but that's what it sometimes has to be, because you can't always be like both creative and like on it all the time. And we have obviously children on different routines, and obviously you have two children, so that's in a whole different ball game. So I think it is challenging, but we've learned a lot as we have gone through. That's how I would summarize that, Kim.
Yeah, anybody that wants to do it, you can do it.
You definitely can.
Amen. Right. The next one was from Rachel and Leandra. They both asked about, they asked different questions around breastfeeding. Rachel quite openly shared her struggles with breastfeeding. She's got two children and she struggled to breastfeed both of her children, and felt a lot of guilt around that, like not being able to feed your child in the most quote unquote natural way. No shade to anybody that obviously formula feeds, but you know, there is this pressure that like breast is best. And then Leandra just asked, as somebody that hasn't been able to breastfeed her children but would like to do so in the future, how have we navigated breastfeeding? And I know you touched on last week that you said it was like one of the hardest things you've ever ever experienced or ever done.
Yeah, it was. And I'm never like, I'm never scared to say it, because I always want people to know that it can be that way. And that's not to like scare people, it's actually the complete opposite. It's to basically tell people that, you know, it is a skill that you have to learn and that your baby has to learn. It's it is factually the most natural way. Biologically it is the way to feed a child, but it is still a skill that has to be learned, which I really struggled to get my head around. I was like, well, why don't we both like know what happens? Do you know what I mean? And like, obviously there's a lot more tongue tie these days, so that's interesting that a lot of the time that obviously impacts latching and things like that. Like breastfeeding shouldn't be painful, and it was initially very painful for me, but after having the tongue tie diagnosis, we decided that we would get it snipped, because not just for feeding but for later on in life, like having proper tongue alignment was important to me. That was like that did resolve things, but it didn't resolve everything. And I guess this is the important thing that I want to say is around breastfeeding, is making sure you've got the right support in place. So a couple of things to note: if you don't, if you choose not to give vitamin K at birth, then
here comes the doula hat, everyone. Well, get ready, the doula hat.
If you choose not to give vitamin K at birth, which we didn't, as in we chose not to, your trust will likely not support you in a tongue-tie division, which is incredibly coercive. But yeah. Nevertheless, that's the situation. They won't okay. support you because they are worried about risk of bleeding. Okay?
Right, okay.
But it's important to note that a baby's blood 5 days after being born will have thickened to the level yeah. of, to the consistency that it needs to be in order okay. to, like if you were to have the tongue division, like it's very unlikely they're going to like bleed out. So anyway, so that's just something to know, which I didn't know. And I found incredibly coercive because the same doctors that would do it on the NHS would do it privately. So there's clearly not that much of a problem. Right. But anyway, so we had it cut privately. It cost, I think, £200 or £250. So it's not cheap, especially when you're obviously you're spending a lot of money on your child anyway.
Yeah.
But with the tongue dye division, and you'll see how this relates in a second, it's important to see an osteopath because okay. the tongue is a function of the whole body. And so if you yeah. you can have your tongue, you can have the tongue divided, but doesn't mean it will stay divided. It can actually reattach. So it's important you do exercises with the baby in order to keep the division divided, if that makes sense.
And how on earth are you doing exercise with a baby? Can
there
I please
are certain,
ask?
There are certain exercises that you do. I won't go into too much detail, but like putting the finger in the mouth and encouraging like sucking motion, wow. getting them to move the tongue in certain ways. It was very insightful. And that's also amazing. Having an osteopath yeah. work on the baby's body. There are small adjustments and alignments. So at that point, we were seeing a cranial osteopath. Uh-huh. Not going to lie, another expense, £100 a time visit, and you uh-huh. were often only in there 10 minutes. So it was really expensive. Wow. And yeah. But all these things...
they're unavoidable, though, I guess, if you want to breastfeed, right?
Well,
and if you have a tongue tie... like,
people do it without. People do it without, and people have different okay. people have different journeys. But
okay, yeah.
for me, it was incredibly important that I breastfed because I don't immunize. So in my right. head, the pressure was yeah, on. I was like, sense. I have to yeah. breastfeed because I'm not immunizing yeah. him, and so I put that pressure on myself, and it was at complete detriment to my mental health. That first year of being a parent was. Quite sad, and it is looking back, it is quite sad because there were so
that
many...
makes so much sense now why you were so like I understand why you were so insistent on breastfeeding as like a it's natural, breast is best, quote unquote, but now I understand on a deeper level why you were so like I got to do it. And it makes sense when yeah. you say that whole breastfeeding and immunizations, you know, that you're giving him all your antibodies and
yeah
etc etc. Yeah, it makes a lot of
it's,
sense.
It's really was really important for me, but the struggle was really really real, and it cost us a lot of money for me to breastfeed. So I know breastfeeding yeah. is meant to be, you know, free versus formula. For yeah. us, it definitely was not free. But
yeah.
do you have to do all those things? No. Was I in a privileged position to do them? Yes. Do I wish more people were able to have that help? Absolutely. I also had a lactation consultant, which I forgot to mention, which overall yeah. breastfeeding cost us thousands of pounds. But oh, I have also found a lot of things out there that can help people that are low cost or no cost.
Okay.
So there's an okay. Instagram page that do osteopath for children. It's like an osteopath for children. And they do yeah. in different places in London. And they do it at no cost or don't okay. donate what you can. So we'll share that on our yeah. social media because it can get really expensive. And it's good to know that yeah. there are these like options out there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was... sorry, go on.
No, I was going to ask, like, whether it's not put you off, but, like, would you do it again?
Breastfeeding.
Having been through that. Yeah, yeah. Would you breastfeed again?
100%. Like, it's a, non- yeah, it's a okay. non-negotiable for me.
Fine.
I think, you know, I didn't mention, but I also had diagnosed low supply. So a lot of people can think okay. they have low supply, but
yeah.
actually it's not always the case. And that's why it's really important to see a lactation consultant to actually get that help. And you can do it. They do like feeding clinics and things at certain trusts. I know like Kingston, not yeah. far from me, they have a feeding clinic. I actually know one of the women that work there. But for me, it was about the time that I needed it. I needed it then and there. I needed someone to come to my house. I still couldn't move after having a cesarean, which likely also impacted my milk supply, having a cesarean.
Yeah.
So there were just like a lot of moving parts, and there was also the pressure that I put on myself, which probably didn't help. But would maybe, I do it all over again? 100%. For me, it's the only way. Like, it's the only way. Yeah. And that's not to say we never used formula. We did at times use it because it was, like, just so debilitating. Like, I don't even know how to do this. I was expressing. I was tube feeding. I didn't even talk about that.
What's tube feeding?
I tube fed Master J for 10 weeks.
How does that work?
It's called a supplementary feeding seat. I think that's what it's called. Yeah, a supplementary feeding system. So in simple terms, how it would work is that I would pump before feeding Master J. I would then put him on my breast with a tube. I slid the tube through the side of his mouth while he was on my breast, and that tube was attached to the bottle of the milk that I just pumped. And the idea here was to increase my milk supply. So I was giving him the milk that I'd just taken out of my breast via the pump, but him sucking, his sucking motion was to stimulate the breast so that it would encourage more milk supply. Because you have to, with breastfeeding, you have to think about it. The more often you put the baby on the breast, the more often they're putting in their orders for more milk. It's like they're ordering more. So they might not get it all at that time, they're saying, hey, I want a bit more. Because when you're born, when the baby's born, your body doesn't know, or your breasts don't know if you've had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 children. They don't know. They'll only know by the amount that they are essentially suckled on. And that's how, you know, that's the only reason, that's the only way that they know. So it's quite a big topic and probably not enough time to go into it, but I can definitely share a few people that I highly respect that have really helped me on my journey and that I would recommend to anybody to help with breastfeeding challenges. And I think it's a really good idea if you are pregnant to be aware of these challenges before having a child. And when I was doulaing, do you remember when we did the TV series, I gave away like a postpartum planning? Actually, we can probably like give that away again.
Get that out again? Yeah, because that was really good.
That actually might help a few people. But essentially, it's a postpartum planning document, and it on there.
I actually used it on myself.
Did you?
Yeah, I did.
Well, it's just a good way to like get everything together. And my point is like getting the numbers, getting the people that you need to know before you have the baby, so that then when the baby does come, you're not there in a depth of despair. Because let's be honest, we can both say like your mind goes to mush when you have a baby. Like, I couldn't even read instructions of a breast pump. Like, I couldn't I couldn't fathom how that was going to work. So understanding these things like beforehand is really vital. But yeah, so just to end like my journey on this, the only thing I would say is, while obviously I'm very open about the fact that I really struggled and it really killed my mental health and my sex drive, and just my life was very hard and not great in that year.
Yeah.
And yes, I would do it all over again. It doesn't mean that if your journey is like that and it's impacting you to that extreme, that you should continue. It was the only way for me, but it definitely doesn't have to be that way. And if you feel that you can no longer breastfeed because it's impacting you so negatively, you should absolutely seek out the other options. I just don't want to like make people think that it has to be that way or that it should be that way. Many, many people have very beautiful breastfeeding journeys, and I am in awe of that. And I hope I get that. I hope I get that like next time.
Next time around, yeah.
But you just don't know. So I'm one extreme end of it. And
yeah, but I appreciate you sharing that story, because I don't think a lot of people are aware that breastfeeding can go like that. I think a lot of people naively just think like, poop, you have a baby and whoop, there's a boob and doo-doo-doo, here we go. And I also think some of the other things you've shared around how you encourage that supply and encourage that like learning as a team, you and Master J together, I think is an important like nugget for people to realise that it doesn't have to be like, it didn't work, end of story. There are actually other ways you can teach each other. Because I didn't realise, I listened to a podcast this week actually about bottle refusal, just because I'm in my motherhood learning journey, and I didn't realise that when a baby breastfeeds, they actually use like not only their cheek muscles, but their jaw muscles and the muscles right up to their, like, the top of their head.
Mm.
As opposed to when they suck a bottle, they're only using, like, their tongue and their inner cheek muscles, which is why sometimes when people say, oh, my child doesn't take a bottle, but they take a boob, it's not that they don't, it's that they have to actually learn, like, a whole new skill of sucking in order to get milk out of that bottle, which, as an outsider, seems like, well, duh, put a bottle in your mouth, there's milk in it, why don't you drink it?
Yeah.
She didn't realise that there's whole more to the story.
I think also with that, there's not just like the bottle or the boob. Like, there are lots of other ways. Like I said, I was doing the supplementary feeding system. You can also cup feed if your baby doesn't want to take a bottle. Like, there are a lot more options available to you that I just don't think are spoken about enough. Like, it's like in hospital, this is a very common thing. Oh, yes, your milk's not coming, or your baby's not, you know, taking enough milk. We need to give the baby formula. And then you feel pressured to give the baby formula, which is nothing wrong with. But why are we interjecting at that point? Because the minute you give formula at that point, or it means you're feeding your baby in a different way, which means your breast doesn't know that your baby then needs milk. So your breast will then slow down the supply. So if it's like the same...
You're also giving that... You're giving that mum like a mental out. Like, remember you said in your birth story that once they told you how many centimetres dilated you were like, right, that's it, nope, I'm done, like, I can't. If you then automatically after 2 minutes say, why don't we try some formula, the tired mum who's naturally going to be like, well, if that's easy, I'll do it, may not then pick the boob up again and say, let's try, because they're like, well, if I can pour it out of a bottle and heat it up in 5 minutes, then woohoo, I'm done.
But equally, if you do choose to give formula, it doesn't mean you can't then go back to the breast. So it doesn't mean that that's the end of the journey. Like, you can go back to it, and there are ways that you can then increase the supply, especially in that first like 8 weeks, 8 to 10 weeks, because your milk doesn't really establish and settle down in terms of supply levels until they're 8 to 10 weeks. It varies for different people, but around that time, and then it will up itself and lower itself when your baby needs more or needs less. So it's really important, like, if you are like combi feeding, for example, which is a common and you know way that people feed their children now, which is fabulous because it does give you that bit of flexibility. It is just important that if you do want to keep breastfeeding, that you will need to pump at the times that your child is having other milk. Does that make sense?
Right, so like,
because otherwise your child is having a meal, but they're not putting their order in with you. So therefore, your breast doesn't know to make that milk.
That does make sense.
So I mean, actually, speaking of pumping, like, your first journey was exclusively pumping, right? Maybe it'd be good to share a little bit on that.
Yeah, I mean, I breastfed Roman for maybe the best part of 4 days. Maybe, let's say, 5. Some of it was breastfeeding, some of it was me trying to navigate. I remember, like, one night in the hospital, I had a 2-night stay after Roman. And I remember one night I was like, yeah, I've just been breastfeeding Roman for, like, 40 minutes, smashed it, da-da-da. And the midwife came and had a look, and she was like, no, he's just playing with you. Like, he's not on your boob, he's just there. And I was like, oh, damn it, I thought I was doing a good thing.
Yeah.
And he probably was trying to, like, navigate my breast and my nipple and where to be, but there was no milk exchange happening at this exchange. So anyway, a long story short, I just decided that I had the supply for pumping. I initially pumped so that, like, Cameron could do some, or maybe my mum could do some, or I just was able to have that freedom. I heard a lot of, like, breastfeeding stories that said, like, oh yeah, I have to sit down for an hour, and then the baby sits on me, feeds for an hour, and then I get 10 minutes to quickly go to the toilet, and then I sit down for another hour and feed them. And I'm happy to spend hours with my babies, that kind of terrified me a little bit in, would I be able to have any independence just going to the toilet or just having a shower? So I decided to pump, which Roman took to really well. And then I just thought, well, if the supply is there, I'm pumping and it's working, let me keep going. Yeah. And my intention wasn't really to pump for a year. My intention was just to take it day by day and see, and maybe at some point I would have to switch formula in, I don't know, particularly like you said, when they get older and they start to maybe want more or want less, or those growth spurts. But actually, I managed to, and I big myself up for it a lot of the time, because I was told by a lot of medical professionals and a lot of health visitors and a lot of midwives that it was something I shouldn't be doing. I exclusively pumped breast milk for a year for my child, and he is absolutely well, was able to get all the like milk production supply he needed at each stage of his development, because a lot of the time I was told, like, well, if you don't put him on the boob, he's not going to get the fattier milk that they get by sucking such and such a way, or he's not going to get the full milk that they get by doing such and such a something.
Yeah.
And in my first time mum, I don't know realm, I was a bit like, and so to your point earlier about kind of doing you and trusting your instinct, I was like, well, if he's growing, there's no question about his weight, he's not miserable, he's not screaming, like, then maybe I'm doing something that works. And if we get to a point where he is underweight or he isn't, he is unhappy, then fine. But I was able to do it. It worked for my family, it worked for me. I didn't quite feel comfortable in my first pregnancy breastfeeding in public, or like being so like free the nip, whereas this time around I'm like, you want to look, here it is, take a look, like, it's a natural human thing. I didn't have that confidence first time around. So I think to any mums that want to do breast but maybe don't feel comfortable with that whole baby on a boob or that whole sucking thing, it is a bit of a strange thing to, you know, you either like it or you don't. And if you don't feel like you like it and you have pumping as an option, I would recommend trying exclusively pumping, because, it worked for me. And I'm quite proud of it, I won't lie.
Yeah, you should be. I think pumping is incredibly hard work. I mean, it's all hard work, but pumping especially, I mean, in my experience, pumping and feeding, it was just really hard work. But
this time
I think
around,
it's a really
just
good
freeing
option.
The nip.
Yeah, just let it. Yeah. I think a couple of things to point out on your journey. So buying a breast pump is really important. People are keen to buy them before having a baby. My advice would be to wait until you have the baby, because you don't know what your situation is going to be. So there are different pumps for different things. There are some pumps called like medical grade pumps, like the name has completely escaped me now, but can share it at a later
Medalla.
Date.
Medalla?
No,
that
so
one?
That's that is a good pump, like the double breast pumped. The double breast pump is a good pump there, but my point here is that if you have a low supply like me, you're going to need a different pump to somebody like you that has quite a good level of supply. So
I should also caveat that I pumped from a single breast pump. Just to add to my superwomanism.
Wow.
Last time around, I had a single Tommy Tippy handheld breast pump. I also use the Hacker sometimes.
Yeah.
This time around, I have a double. I haven't actually pumped that much, but we're just doing little bits so she can take a bottle every now and then. But I have a double hands-free breast pump this time. But yes, I did sit holding on to one boob at a time, pumping in a single pump, by the way.
That's very... that's really hard work. so on the pumps, like, definitely waiting. And I think also doing it under the guise of, like, you know, getting a bit of help with it if you're not sure. But like, follow your instinct, like you followed your instinct that was the right thing. If you are thinking about exclusively pumping, the only other piece of advice I would give or things to mention is if you can stand the feeling or the sensation of having the baby on the breast, I would try and do that like once a day or once every couple of days, because there is a lot of exchange that happens between the baby's mouth and your breast, which then tell the body what antibodies, etc., to produce. So if the baby never goes to the breast, then the body is still producing milk because it's having its orders with the pump, but it won't necessarily be as tailored if the baby never latches. So even if you're not going to feed from the breast, it's good just to put the baby on the breast at times, just so your body knows, they're still like, I need to create this for them, you know, because it's the best defense or protection for them. I think obviously we're not qualified in this, we are just sharing our own experience, and we can definitely share some more advice with people that are qualified to do this.
Yeah, we've been full-time restaurants. Put your orders in at the front.
Cool.
Right, we have covered a hell of a lot in today's season finale. I still can't believe it's our last one, mate.
I know, crazy.
I think we'll have to just, you know, I don't know. Well, we'll see if the people want a second series, then maybe we'll give the people some more of our boring old lives.
Well, we've got a lot of questions that we've not covered, so we couldn't cover them all today, but there's definitely lots of ideas for a second series, so it's definitely a potential on the table. So I think it's time to wrap it up. So if you've been here for 8 episodes, we want to thank you. Genuinely, we want to thank you for just supporting us, our little podcast that has clearly gone global in 13 countries. And that's just incredible for us. And it wouldn't have happened if you were not listening. We've thoroughly enjoyed it. And like I say, if people do want another series, then it is something we are definitely open to doing. But all will be revealed in time. So we will love you and leave you all there. And we hope you have a great day, no matter where or how you've listened to this podcast in a variety of places that Khadija usually talks about. So thanks very much, babe. Have an amazing rest of your day. And to all those listening, have a great day.
Thank you so much, everyone.
See you later. Bye.